My colleague Lawrence Wright has covered some particularly intimidating topics. He wrote a fantastic book about Scientology, something the Scientologists themselves did everything they could to prevent. And he spent some time in the Middle East and wrote about Al-Qaeda in a book called The Looming Tower, and that won the Pulitzer Prize. For his most recent work, though, he barely had to leave home.
We had a what is very formally called an editorial conversation about, I don't know, a year and a half ago, and it went a little bit like this. Why don't you write about Texas? And I said, well, maybe I will. And then no more conversation, and a year later you came back with a manuscript, essentially a book, and it'll be a book in March, and we'll talk again at that time. But
my memory of that conversation, David, is you asked me to explain Texas, and I reminded you that I get paid by the word. That's a very big question you just asked.
Well, I got what I deserved, and thank God for it.
Okay, explain Texas is not as dumb as it sounds, especially to those of you who live there. Larry lives in Austin, and what he set out to do was to look in great depth at what happens in the Capitol, where every statewide office is held by a Republican and has been for quite a while. Larry's article in The New Yorker is called The Future is Texas. And by that, he meant our future, the whole American future.
Larry, I've got to ask you right off the bat. It sounds to me in the era of Trump, we've got two political poles that are establishing themselves independent of Washington. You've got California, which wants to be the kind of liberal opposite of everything Trump, and then you've got Texas.
Right.
How is Texas establishing itself as a political center, and how is this happening, taking shape?
Well, long before the country became as Republican as it is now, Texas was that. In a way, it was the model for the country that we have become. And what's happening in Texas is that the conservative agenda has largely been accomplished, has been years ago. And now the party, the only party in Texas really, the Republicans, are splitting in half between the conservative business-oriented group and the more social cultural group. And that side has not yet enacted its full agenda, and they are really on the warpath. I have a feeling that, you know, this is a kind of model for what's happening right now in Washington, because the Democrats, just as they have been in Texas, have been sidelined in Washington. And the argument really is between two wings of the Republican Party.
The governor, Greg Abbott, doesn't have much of a national profile like, say, Scott Walker or Jerry Brown. Where does Abbott stand politically?
Well, until this current legislative session, Greg Abbott was seen as a kind of business conservative and a cautious figure. He's popular in Texas, and in part because I think he's quiet and, you know, he doesn't raise quite a lot of ruckus, you know. But this session, the word that I got when I was doing this story and spending a lot of time in the Texas legislature is that he has been terrified of the lieutenant governor, Dan Patrick, running against him. And Patrick is a formidable, probably the most powerful political figure in the state.
He's terrified of his own lieutenant governor.
And even though Patrick said at the beginning of the session he was not going to run against Greg Abbott, Abbott's behavior has been such that he is constantly fearful of being outflanked on the right by his lieutenant governor. So whatever Patrick does, you know, Patrick had a list of several bills that he wanted the governor to pass. He demanded that the governor call a special session, which the governor did.
What did he really want?
Well, there are two things that he wants. One is he wants to have a bill that would cap property taxes. And property taxes is the way, main way we finance our schools in Texas. It's a way of smothering public schools. In Dan Patrick's world, you know, we'd be moving to private schools and vouchers. And that's something that he's fought for very hard.
He wants to crush public schools.
Well, he's defunding them, and, you know, that's the same thing,
isn't it?
I can see. And then the other thing that he's avid for is a bathroom bill, as we call it. He calls it the Women's Right to Privacy Act. Now, I've spent a lot of time listening to the testimony. I can tell you that there were trans people coming in who, you know, for instance, people who had been girls when they were born— with full beards and male pattern baldness. Mm-hmm. Where are they supposed to go to the bathroom? And there's not much time spent on taking care of their concerns.
Now, is this what their constituents want? Is this what suburban Texas constituents want above all from their legislators? Or are these legislators going above and beyond the cultural call of duty?
No, the majority of Texans don't care about the bathroom bill. The Republicans, especially in the suburbs, are passionate about immigration, however. And so, the sanctuary cities bill is very popular in the suburbs. There's a lot of feeling
to punish sanctuary cities in
yes,
some way.
Yes. And our sheriff, who was just elected, Sally Hernandez, had campaigned on a kind of sanctuary cities platform. And the governor withdrew $1.5 million of state funds immediately from Travis County, which is Austin, and been lampooning her on he calls her Sanctuary Sally and so on. But they passed a law that would imprison somebody like our sheriff if she refuses to hold in jail a person that the immigration officials might be interested in.
Now, Larry, if I remember right, you were born in Oklahoma, but you've lived in Texas virtually your entire life.
Yeah.
But we both were born at a time when the most liberal inheritor in the presidency of the FDR New Deal model was Lyndon Baines Johnson,
right,
a Texan. So how do you view the evolution of Texas politics? Why did it get so conservative? What happened in Texas?
Well, I had this conversation the other day with Karl Rove, who I have a regular breakfast group on Monday, and Karl comes sits in every once in a while, and I was asking him about how Texas turned so red, given that it had a very progressive background. And he said he didn't really think of it as a progressive background, that it was more a populist one, and that the populists believe that somebody's after them. And the Texas populists of old believed that it was the Wall Street bankers that were screwing the little guy. But that's changed. Now they believe that it's government. And government is the enemy that's taking advantage of the little guy.
Here we're sitting here in New York, where you, thank God, come visit us every once in a while. President Johnson once complained that the greatest bigots in the world are the Democrats on the east side of New York, especially when they're thinking about Texans.
Right.
You get that a lot? Do you feel that the rest of the country, particularly the big bad eastern elites along the Amtrak corridor, look down on Texas?
Oh, they do. It's not a feeling. It's openly expressed. But I've often thought, when people think of Texas, they think of us as, braggarts, as, kind of having a careless personal lives and, up and down, narcissistic and caring only about ourselves and so on. And
I think you refer to the eastern attitude toward Texans as the Texans have they possess the nation's id.
Yes. And I've thought the politician who most expresses that is probably Donald Trump. And if he'd put on a cowboy hat rather than a gimme cap, I think people would have recognized him in a way. But I do wonder, will Manhattan ever be held to account the way Texas is for its political figures? I haven't seen it.
Well, I think isn't he getting held to account, Trump?
Is expressing a Manhattan cultural ideal? I don't think so.
No, you make a good point.
Yeah.
Larry, you've written that Texas bears the responsibility of being the future.
Oh.
What is it about the state that makes you think it has a certain kind of destiny, political or otherwise?
Well, for one thing, it's growing so fast. It's outsized growth, and it's expected to double by 2050.
Why is it growing so fast?
Well, jobs mainly. It's been a tremendous job center. It hasn't necessarily produced the kind of good-paying jobs that one would hope for, but still it has a tremendous amount of opportunity.
And how will the population boom in Texas affect its politics, do you think?
Well, immigration in Texas is one of the things that turned it red initially. You know, it was in migration of non-Texans into the cities from the Midwest and from the coast, who had different political traditions than the kind of progressive Democrats that we had in office in the 50s and early 60s. They brought a different tradition, and it was Dallas, where I grew up, that became the first Republican city when it elected Bruce Alger, a real right-wing congressman, and John Tower then became our first senator. And that was a break with the past. It's interesting now, you know, those people filled in the suburbs, and the suburbs are where the redness really gets bright.
So when people talk about and have written about the coming purple Texas, a political transformation of Texas, this is kind of stars in the eyes in the Democratic Party about Texas. Do you believe it?
Well, you know, Texas would be blue now if people actually voted.
Why is that?
Well, it's been said that, you know, because it's ethnically, you know, the Mexican Americans don't vote. But the truth is, the people who don't vote are the young, the poor, and the poorly educated. And that's what we have in abundance in Texas. And there's an effort by the Republican establishment to keep those people from voting. The voter ID laws that have been enacted repeatedly and repeatedly overturned by the Supreme Court, you know, this is a total effort at disenfranchisement. There's very little money put into the schools.
Hillary Clinton made a big ad buy. I thought she had a shot at Texas. At least for a while, thought she had a shot
at Texas.
She was
ahead by 1 point at one point, and that was—
But was she deluded?
Yeah, I think, you know, her campaign manager, Gary Morrow, said Texas is not in the balance.
You think it'll be in the balance in our lifetime?
Oh, yeah, I think it could be. I think the thing is that both parties in Texas are fragile. You know, the Democratic Party doesn't even have offices in a lot of counties in Texas.
The portrait you paint of it is that it's disorganized, depleted, leaderless, rudderless.
And they're now desperately seeking celebrities to run for offices.
Who does it want to get?
Tommy Lee Jones would be top of the list for some. And he'd be hard to vote against. You know,
he does have that craggy look.
But the Republican Party is also divided. It's, in a way, it's akin to what the Democratic Party in Texas was decades ago, which was really two parties.
Do you feel hopeful about the direction of all of this for Texas?
No, I'm not hopeful. I'm upset. You know, as a citizen of Texas, I'm disturbed at the direction that it's taking. You know, Texas is a marvelous, dynamic entity, and it's got tremendous resources and great people and, you know, and a possible wonderful future. But it's not going to be wonderful if we don't educate our children and if we don't take care of the health and welfare of our citizens. And that's where the state's falling down.
Larry, thanks.
My pleasure.
You can find Larry Wright's The Future is Texas and everything he's written for The New Yorker at newyorkerradio.org.